Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 45, Lower Decks, season 1, episode 9, Crisis Point.
Oh, great! Well, now it's just us. Yeah, thanks for ruining the awesome captain murder this was all building to. We were supposed to fight on a rickety metal catwalk.
Oh, let me make it up to you.
Double punch! Double lock!
Whoa, how did you...
I know all your moves and everything about you. I know you dressed up like Toby Targ every Halloween, even when you were too old. And I know you actually love the warp core.
Take that back. The warp core's lame. You only break rules because you know that's what everyone expects you to do. If you really were a badass, you'd do the hard thing and just be a good officer. They're not casting you as the villain. You are.
Are you good?
I'm so good.
Because if you're good, I could start with a knock-knock joke.
A knockety knock, 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 knock.
Knock, knock. No, wait. You tell it. No, wait.
I don't know the joke.
You should start it. You should start it with
How's this work? Okay. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
45.
45 who? Oh, I guess.
Welcome to the 45th episode of the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Right.
Sorry, I was smiling. You could sense that I was smiling.
A smile sense.
And my own small joke.
I have that in my notes that it's episode 45.
Oh, good. Keeping up with the notes.
So I would remember this. I did it last week, so I would remember. Because I had a feeling you were going to pop it to me, and I was going to be like, oh, shit.
Well, you're right. So which episode is it?
Third episode.
Which episode is it, Jesse?
It's episode 45.
Episode 45. And which episode of Star Trek are we talking about?
Episode 9-er.
Of what?
of the Lower Decks.
Of Lower Decks, that's right.
I think it's called Crisis Point.
Crisis Point. Episode 9, Lower Decks. That's what we're talking about tonight. And we're going to have a thoroughly good time over the next, what, 3 or 4 hours discussing this.
It's got Winger Bingston Jr.
Who, by the way, I tried looking up who plays him.
Oh, word.
And depending on where, I just haven't found it. Maybe it's on one of the listings, but they, you know, Memory Alpha and stuff says, we don't know who plays it. I think it might be Jack Quaid who plays Boimler.
Did you know he's the son of Dennis Quaid?
I did.
That's where I knew him from before. Remember when I was like, I recognize that guy from somewhere. Quaid. And you were like...
You recognized a portion of his genes.
Well, you said, oh, you recognize him from The Boys. I'm like, yeah, but that's not what I'm thinking. It was Meg Ryan and Dennis Quaid when mashed together is what I recognized.
Oh.
So you recognize him from Dennis Quaid, but not from Meg Ryan.
I just said, I recognize him from Meg Ryan and Dennis Quaid mashed together.
Earlier you were talking about Dennis Quaid.
Well, I said Dennis Quaid because the last name was Quaid.
It'd be funnier if it was Randy.
We live in a sexist society where they give the Quaid to the thing.
Where they give all those handsome they give all the Quaid to the boy.
What's the song you said tonight? Remember that song? It's all like, tonight, tonight, tonight. Oh,
like Phil Collins.
Gonna make it right tonight. And I think that's how it goes.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Phil Collins, yep.
But tonight, we will be talking about this episode.
I just want to say real quick that as a kid, there was like a set of records that came from somewhere. It was like, we had
set of records.
Mousercise.
Ooh, behind that shelf over there.
Were they like world records?
Wait, did you say Mousercise?
I'm telling you now.
Mousercise?
I'm telling you now.
Okay.
It was like the 80s, and we had Mousercise.
Everybody's all wound up today.
Well, I mean, just let me...
Dan's a little nervous. He's waiting to hear back about his COVID test.
Oh, no.
No, I'm not. Mousercise, Genesis, which has Phil Collins, and Smurfing Around the World was the name of a song from the Smurf album, I think.
Wow. What's Mousercise? Is that a Disney exercise?
Yeah, it's like a Mickey Mouse kind of like, it sounds like Jazzercise.
it was like an exercise show on Disney.
And the record sounded like some disco or something.
Stretch those bums!
Okay. Okay, that's all I had to say. And you made it, and you stretched out. See, when you say, we've been talking about this, been off topic for too long, Dan, it's because
I never said
you
we were
stretch
off topic.
It. No, but you have in the past, and you...
I was interjecting just to let the audience know that they are not mistaken. This is indeed a Star Trek podcast,
yes,
but we do talk about other things.
I didn't take issue with that part. I took issue with the fact that afterwards you kept saying like, boobledy-boo, you know? And so when I'm off topic for too long, keep in mind that it can be a third of that time if you just let me say A, B, C, and D, so therefore E. Then it's done. Then it's done.
I was told there would be no math.
You're right. That was funny, actually.
No, it's good because I mean we do have to provide a certain amount of entertainment, and we are dealing with a 22, 23 minute animated television program, which is very dense and packed full of stuff, but we got to squeeze in some other.
You're very dense and packed full of stuff.
Oh, snap.
Okay.
So, Dr. Migley Boo.
Migley, yeah.
Yes, Dr. Migley
Boo. Who's the voice of that guy?
Paul F. Tompkins.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
And the reason I was looking it up, because I was convinced for a minute that it was Mr. Billingsley who played Phlox for a minute.
John Billingsley?
John Billingsley. I couldn't remember his first name briefly, but it was not John Billingsley.
I let you remember Billingsley. Well, I guess it makes sense you remember Billingsley.
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 That's a memorable name.
I didn't want to sound like, you just threw John up there because like you didn't think of the name.
No, I hear that. I know that. It's like when you meet a person who knows you, but you don't know them.
Yeah,
you know, or you have a vague memory and you don't want to get that name wrong.
Oh, I don't want to even think about it. I've had some really uncomfortable scenarios.
And what's hilarious is if somebody doesn't remember my name or gets my name wrong, I don't feel any negative.
But I did one time. What I did is like it happened, and I could have moved on, and I kept just going back. Like, I can't believe I didn't remember who you were.
Yeah.
I kept going back to it, and he's like, "It's okay," and I just kept making it worse. So yeah, the thing is, just like own it and move on. That's the deal.
It's perfectly normal. Don't feel bad about it, folks. All right. So that concludes the digression portion of the podcast. The rest of the podcast will be 100% Star Trek content. Yeah. Just fat, juicy.
You guys will probably throw some Orville in.
Dripping.
Some Orville.
Dripping content. Star Wars?
That was the
that's the
opening.
Yeah, right? That's the theme.
Except I did it off key. I did it in a different key.
You added a couple of da-da-da's in there, but it was basically it was for the most part.
You did everything you could to disguise that from me. Yeah. To make me look the fool.
Isn't that
Oh
it?
Yeah, no, it doesn't go da-da-da-da. It goes da-da-da.
Oh shit. That's like with a Vanilla Ice and Bohemian Rhapsody argument.
No, it's under pressure. It's
under pressure. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was offensive.
Their only song. Yeah. They have other songs.
We were talking about.
Yeah, to be fair, we were earlier discussing Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah,
it's a common thing for us to discuss the band Queen for 2 or 3 hours prior to each podcast to get us hyped up, which is why the flavor of this podcast, if you think about it, is very similar to listening to an early Queen album.
Absolutely. Jesse, tell us a quick fact you know about the kind of picks they use for the guitar.
Oh, well, that guy uses like a coin.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's like,
I mean, he uses a coin too.
That song where he's like, Killer Queen. And then when the guitar goes, you can really kind of tell the penny or the coin.
Yeah.
We need to get Dan more into Queen 1 and Queen 2.
It's a British coin, I imagine. It might be.
No, he had them hand imported from Papua New Guinea.
I don't think it's a quarter.
Yeah, you're probably right.
They ain't got no quarters.
You're right. That was very nationalistic.
It's probably a pound.
I think it might be I think it's like a.
Is it a halfpenny?
It's like a shilling or something.
A halfpenny.
Is it a tuppence?
See, it just goes to show like how Americans just think the world's about them. I just assumed it was a quarter. A halfpenny. If you haven't got a halfpenny, then God bless you.
Yeah. So that concludes the false digression where we advertised that we were going to talk about Star Trek, but it was all in fact a trick.
Yeah.
Right. And we diverted to I can't really recall what we were talking
well,
about.
We're slowly
That's completely
got there.
Part of our we, formula. We're still, doing our podcast. This is how we do it.
It started, related because I started singing the song and then you pulled up. I was like, I did it wrong. And then I pulled up Queen and Vanilla Ice.
That was really out there.
We're doing it again. Yeah, you're right. It was really out
there. Yeah, but this doesn't count. This is a follow up to the previous thing.
it's got Winger Bingston Jr.
It does have Winger Bingston Jr. Oh, okay. So Paul F. Tompkins.
Dr. Migley Moot.
We can talk
Not
here.
John Billingsley.
We can talk about the notable guest actors. This was more crew-centric, but we did, of course, have Paul F. Tompkins as the bird counselor. Yeah. And how do you pronounce his name again? Migley Moo?
Migley Moo.
I think it was Migley Boo.
Migley Moo. Migley Boo?
Migley Boo.
I think it was a B.
Migley Boo, Migley Moo. Either way. Debated amongst yourselves, audience.
I wasn't quite sure what they were saying, but it was great.
I'm almost sure it was Migley Boo, but you know, it could be wrong.
I loved, okay, we'll get into the rest of the episode in a second, but I think we can dispense with the fact, I don't know about you guys, I love the fucking bird counselor.
Yeah, that was really one of the good parts.
Yeah.
Paul F. Tompkins is really one of the funniest improv comedians out there right now. He's on, you know, Comedy Bang Bang, especially the podcast. He's all over the place. Bajillion Dollar Properties. He's on the new DuckTales. He plays Bob's Burgers.
The new DuckTales, whoa.
Yeah, the new DuckTales is by all accounts very good.
Ooh. Oh yeah, I've been meaning to watch that.
But he's on Bob's Burgers as Randy, the documentary filmmaker, and other things. Yeah. I don't know where he got his start, but I know I first noticed him on Mr. Show with Bob and David and the follow-up show. You know, he's been on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Rick and Morty, Adventure Time.
Been all over the place.
Community, Key and Peele. But he played one of the most pivotal parts in certainly modern television history. And both of you will no doubt agree. He played Professor Twilly on King of the Hill, where he taught Bobby proper clowning.
Oh, yeah.
He was the clown teacher.
About the guffaw.
Professor Twilly, about the guffaw, ha. The ha. The guffaw, what, I can't even remember what it was. The guffaw, the ha. The ha-ha and the guffaw and the right. Ha-ha.
Yeah, and there was
a... the ha-ha!
Yeah, and Hank was, of course, all against it, but then Bobby was like, Professor Twilly told us, gave us this many reasons, or whatever the line was, about why Adam Sandler isn't funny. And then Hank was like, that's the one thing I can agree with him on. Yeah, the guffaw. And he was some kind of artsy clown teacher.
He's a brilliant actor. Anything he does, he's got a bunch of great podcasts too.
I don't have anything against Adam Sandler, by the way.
Adam Sandler, we all have a certain degree of respect for Adam Sandler, at least portions of his career.
Yep.
When he was funny, maybe.
When he was funny. Mm. Yeah, so Paul F. Tompkins, catch him where you can. Tons of podcasts, Comedy Bang Bang, of course.
So the gag, of course, with him was that he used fruit metaphors or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like something
food,
about pineapple.
Food metaphors.
Food metaphors. Yeah, I was reading my first one because I took them. There weren't that many, but it was, well, the first one was, this report is a veritable fruit salad of insubordination.
Yeah.
So I guess that just means a variety of it, and it makes sense. Then this is talking to Mariner, and then he goes, she wants us to meet every week, cooking up some healthy strategies to marinate you. Marinate, Mariner?
Yeah.
I don't know, that's weird. But also food. You into the officer she knows you can be. And then full stop, Beckett, we need to find an outlet for all that rage. Have you ever made paella? Which wasn't really a food reference. That was kind of...
reference, but not like a pun or anything.
Yeah, that was like a joke on the joke or something. And then
my favorite was the last one with Freeman.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, with Freeman, the next one was, that's a real ethical pickle. Which we all know a pickle. It's like, oh, you're in a pickle. That makes sense. And then, Carol, you're being a pineapple right now.
Yeah.
It's like, wait a minute. There's another joke on the joke. Because like all of those other ones led up to stuff. It's like, okay, I get it. And you're like, wait, what? She's prickly, I guess? I don't know.
And
it seems like there could have been better words.
I just thought that was great. Carol, you're being a real pineapple right now.
Yeah.
It's like, ah.
And it's like the captain probably sees the therapist a lot more than Mariner does. And that's kind of funny that... We have all the problems that, you know, Mariner has, all her demons or whatever, but like the captain's just going to this Dr. Migley Moo all the time.
Yeah.
Migley Boo.
And getting advice a la Deanna Troi, no doubt.
Well, I mean, Mariner so much wants to avoid her problems that she would rather sit in silence in the brig than go have to actually...
She likes the brig.
Yeah.
She's mentioned before that she really likes it.
Yeah, but part of her shit is like, I mean, we can talk about it later, but part of her shit we discover is it's a little... This is what I was talking about, and I'm not saying I'm the one who came up with this. I remember...
Dan's the one who came up with
it. I just remember, like, earlier on I was talking about...
You have to cite him.
I'll just say what I was wondering personally, and I bet other people were too, is this all just going to play out like, she's just carefree, doesn't give a shit? Or like, is there going to be a point in which she really sort of analyzes the truth to that and how much of a show is she putting on versus how much is she actually like carefree and not give a shit? And this one kind of reveals a bit that she actually, you know, is putting on a bit of a facade for people.
Yeah.
And so you can look back at things like the brig, that would be a good place for her to, you know, avoid her problems, I guess.
Avoid problems, avoid responsibility.
She'd rather sit in the brig than go to a therapist once a week. I don't know how long she was in the brig for. That's just like going to your room.
See, that's why jail isn't such a good idea all the time.
Yeah. For real.
Maybe for some people.
It's better for the criminals to run around free and learn their lessons and feel guilty about it.
Learn their lessons.
Learn their lessons.
Except when they don't feel guilt.
Well, the other semi-notable guest star was Gary Cole.
Yes.
And Gary Cole is somebody you'll recognize from a million different things. I mean, he played Da Vinci, which was like, first of all, it's great because it's a two half lines, basically, in the whole episode. But
two appearances of the
You know, he was Mike Brady in the Brady Bunch movie. He was in The Line of Fire. Probably most famously, he was Bill Lumberg in The Office.
Yeah. But, oh, word. Okay.
Yeah, but he was in Dodgeball. He was the voice of Harvey Birdman. He was in Pineapple Express.
Oh, he's in Veep.
And he was Ricky Bobby's dad in Talladega Nights. But he's also Bob's Burgers. He's Officer Bosco on he's on Bob's Burgers all the time as the police detective who's occasionally interacting with them. But he played Da Vinci, and I thought he did an excellent job. But it's funny, he's such a name actor. It was amusing to have him be in that role for basically almost no, you know, you could have had anybody do that.
That's like the first, I think, I don't know if it was the first episode of South Park. It was the first season, definitely, where they had the gay dog episode. That was actually George Clooney,
yeah,
just barking like a dog. And because, like, apparently George Clooney was like, I want to be in South Park. They're like, okay, we'll give you this part, you know, and he probably wasn't expecting that.
Classic.
Does George Clooney just go around annoying people that he thinks are cool and, like, they're just like, okay, dude, like, we'll...
I think he mostly hangs out on his, he lives on, like, Lake Como or whatever in Italy and...
Oh, word.
Someplace like that and hangs out being hot, being old and hot.
Being old and hot. Oh, man, to be old and hot.
Yeah.
Is Sean Connery still hot?
No.
No.
Okay. He's a little overripe.
Mm. Well, it happens to everyone. Can't get more distinguished forever.
So we can get into the episode.
It began with they went to the planet, you know, where they broke Prime Directive.
The rad people were eating the lizard people.
Yeah, and and they called him, she said, lizard men will no longer be subject to rat oppression. So there's lizard men, and then they just called the other one, Mariner just called the other people rat. They're just rats.
and the lizard man had a named rat. He had a funny lisp, like she said, what is there anything else you like to do? And he's like, bask?
Yeah, he's like, well, we are delicious. That's right. So what is, a basilisk. I was thinking basilisk. Isn't a basilisk is like a
No, he means bask. I know what he means. Too bad.
No, I know. Okay, I know. Like, I was trying that. If I really meant that, that would be looking way too deep into shit.
All right.
But what I meant was bask. I was kind of looking into it and a little bit for amusement because I know what they meant by bask, like laying in the sun. But it's funny because he's a lizard that's basking. Do you think they named basilisks that because lizards like to bask? I guess I was.
It could be that he likes basking because he comes from the separatist Basque region of the Iberian Peninsula.
That's Basque with a Q.
Mm. Yeah.
So basilisk is a legendary reptile reputed to be a serpent king, basilisk. So do you think basilisks like to bask?
Yeah, I would expect so. I think they have similar characteristics similar to snakes and lizards.
Of lizard men.
Yeah.
You have, they you know, the whole body temperature thing, and they have to soak up the sun for a while.
You know, it's much less, these lizard men are much less threatening than the ones apparently roaming around on Earth.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she broke
They're getting eaten by rats.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
How threatening can they be?
So what do you do when you break the Prime Directive? How do you play that afterwards? Because Freeman was like, well, we just got to leave him alone from here on out. Now, she did sort of relent and say, well, we'll give you some food replicators if you stop eating. It's like...
and it was a silly line, but I did like it. It's like, I don't know. Can they make nutrient pellets? Yeah.
He's like, yes. Yeah.
He's like, what's wrong with you? You can make, like, nachos and
shit.
They
just want nutrient pellets.
Yeah.
Because they're rats.
You can make poutine.
Yeah.
By all accounts, a pretty good poutine.
It's like, we're eating these tasty lizards, but what we really want are some nutrient pellets.
So... Yeah, I don't know. I guess with the Prime Directive, and this is a question that's probably beyond the scope of this episode, is like once you break the Prime Directive, how much more are you breaking it by continuing to help?
Yeah.
As opposed to like just leaving. You can't just leave them at that point because you already broke it and shit's fucked up. So I don't know. That's, like I said, beyond the scope of
it. It's like when the rabbit, you know, we accidentally brought the rabbits over. Okay, so we'll get a bunch of, you know, cats and snakes and release them into the wild.
Right.
It's like, those are a problem now, too.
So yeah,
release the gorillas.
Is leaving well enough alone better, or is, like, trying to make it better? Because, you don't know.
That's a whole discussion that we don't get to see in this episode.
It's a whole other can of rats.
But I kind of like that because this episode plays with the Star Trek structure in a lot of ways, but one of them is that intro would be the intro to the rest of the episode, would be figuring out, oh no, what exactly do we do here? And Star Trek has done that a couple times when they talk about, you know, we've manipulated something, what do we do? I think one thing that comes to mind is when Worf's brother wanted to save those people, So he created that holodeck where he told the people they had to go through some caves to escape their city because there was going to be a calamity, but actually their planet was going to explode. So he did a trickaroo to get them on the Enterprise, and it was a whole kind of thing.
That was an insurrection, right? That was the episode.
Insurrection
that...
uses the exact same concept.
Yeah, it was the thing that Insurrection was based on, basically.
Yeah, the Sona or whatever. They were like the
It's like a seventh season, right?
Yeah, I think it was a seventh season. Yeah.
Yeah.
With Rozhenko. I forget what his brother's name was. No, it wasn't Alexander.
Sona.
Carl.
Schlansky.
It was Carl Rozhenko. Worf's long-lost brother. It was like a Cybok thing where we didn't know Worf had a brother, and then all of a sudden he had a brother.
So, yeah, Da Vinci was skeet shooting, huh?
Yeah.
So, and the whole thing was Boimler wanted
skeet.
He was doing advanced diplomacy. It's funny, he's like, he wanted to know how to like, not just, he was eager to please, but he also wanted to know how much he should be eager to please. Because he knows, I guess he's aware that he can be a little over the top, maybe. Maybe this is some self-awareness, or maybe it's just him not being self-aware and just like worrying about everything. I don't know.
I also liked okay, so this wasn't a holodeck goes crazy storyline. This was a main character has psychological problems.
Yeah.
You know, the main character went crazy and, which was pretty clever. And the Boimler thing was interesting because they strongly are pushing in the, you know, Hollow Pursuit style, like, you know, kind of like the Barkley stealing people's images, you know, for their own purposes. And on the one hand, Barkley was a little creepier because he had the women dressed up a certain way. There was a strong implication that he was not only kicking, you know, Hollow Riker and Hollow Geordi's asses, but that he was making love to Crusher and Troy.
Yeah.
Weird.
But fundamentally, he was somebody who was using the holodeck in order to help himself with something for a selfish reason. And Boimler is no different here. He got everyone's personal logs and ingested them into an AI to recreate all those people on the holodeck, which is I don't think it's any more noble just because he's using it to try to get increase his chances at getting a promotion or this opportunity
it's better than him doing it to try to kill everybody, but it's still a selfish purpose.
It's fairly selfish purpose.
And it's funny, he's talking about like uploading the crew's private logs, and then Rutherford responds with, aren't those private? I thought that was a funny little gag. You remember that point? That was funny.
I liked in the scene before, in the opening scene, when Mariner said, it's the 80s, dude. Yeah. We don't have psychological problems.
Yeah. That was funny on two levels, because it's like...
It's the 2380s.
Yeah, and that's something 1980s people would probably say. And then she goes, you're a loose cannon, which is also kind of like an 80s reference as well.
Turn in your gun and badge.
Yeah, so...
You're suspended for 2 weeks.
So
I got to fill out all these forms for all the damage you've done.
So, and then the private logs thing, I mean, so first of all, how did he get them? Whatever, who cares, right? You kind of wonder how he's just had access to those, but he did somehow. He's a sneaky thief. But that also sort of opens up to the next episode, which I saw like the first 5 seconds of the preview. Cause I don't care about like watching the next preview. I just don't do it. And I didn't turn it off in time. And so,
you don't have to defend watching.
I mean, I just want people to know that I've got like that I'm consistent with. I have rules that I play by. I'm not saying my rules are better or worse. I'm just saying I want people to know that I try to be consistent.
So okay.
So the private logs.
Okay, real quick. You know the whole deal with the Masonic, you know, the Masons?
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. The secret society, that's not so secret, all that.
Mm-hmm.
Got nothing against them. More power to you if you're a Mason. I'm not critical of the Masons. I'm using a Mason thing by way of analogy. So in the Masons, you know, there's this rule where you to wear a ring, you know, with the Masonic symbol, you can only wear that ring if you're a Mason. Here's the problem. That rule only applies if you're a Mason. You don't have to follow Mason rules if you're not a Mason, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're good to go. Whatever you do, like whatever your rules are, you're good. You don't have to like,
because I'm not part of the Masons.
No. I'm saying, but it's an analogy. So I'm saying that you're defending yourself from rules you've set up for yourself.
I know, but like, I don't want someone to come up to me, and not that anyone would do this, but people do this in other contexts where it's like, I say I've casually mentioned that I don't watch the preview to the next episode. And then if I mention something from the next episode, someone's gonna be like, I thought you didn't watch previews from the next episode.
I hear you, Dan, but you don't need to be dealing with people like that.
That's we don't
that a person acting like that automatically invalidates not only their position, but their entire reason for being, you know, permitted to survive on the planet.
I guess there's a point there, but, you know.
But please, this should not dissuade fans from coming up and saying hi to us if you recognize us in the streets. Granted, we will be wearing masks and limiting our exposure to going outside, but if you're at the grocery store or something and you see somebody who looks kind of like us in a mask, don't be shy. Come up to us. We have fans coming up to us all the time, and the vast majority of them do not, you know, sort of critique us for abrogating our own casual rule set.
And we have so many fans coming up to us that we have fans that come up to other people who mistakenly assume that they must look like what we sound like.
Yeah.
So.
And we have fans, we have so many fans, in fact, that sometimes we actually have, there are fans of some of our fans.
Yeah, it's
because some
up.
Of our fans are so popular, you know, like Gibberkit, for example. Mm-hmm. They themselves are so popular.
Oh, it's
that
true.
That they have their own fans.
That's not even fucked up. I'm all for it.
I think it's excellent.
Yeah, it's most excellent.
And it's not a hierarchical thing. It's a web.
You got
it's
a lot of fans.
It's a flat web.
Dan Glaubitz.
I don't have, you know. I don't have any fans.
Do you have any of those self-articulating fans that go back and forth?
Self-articulating fans, like,
I don't know what the, I don't know what the term is.
It's like the thing that holds the articulating arm that holds the lamp. Like,
now, you know the fans that, like, if you click the button, they go like left or right.
Yeah, yeah, I do have. Like, I think all bit. Fans are like that.
And they're like,
like sprinklers, except a little different.
Sprinklers are cool.
So what I was trying to say is, yeah, I'm all about. I think sprinklers are all right. I was gonna say I was all about them, but then I decided that
sprinklers
was a little,
are all
that
just
wasn't
all right by me.
That wasn't entirely honest. What I was saying about the private
You're
thing
a liar.
Is him putting up the private logs. That's how we know that they're able to get all that special information, right?
Do you think private logs is a Starfleet term for shits?
No. But I also think, but also it led to the ending of this episode, which was, you know, him. Because,
I mean, they do use Navy ranks. If they used Army ranks, then it would work better.
Because
you have private logs. Because, you're Private Jones. Sorry.
Because they
Major
were
Major logs.
Because they were private logs that he uploaded, the side effect of that wasn't expected, I thought that was pretty good, is at the end it's like he accidentally found out.
Yeah. That, I love that.
Yeah, and you know what the fuck thing is though? Like, I didn't even realize that they didn't know that she was.
I was thinking about it because on the one hand, I think they may have been able to do a bit of a stronger job stressing that it's a secret, because the audience knows that almost immediately,
right,
from the first episode, right, and as well as from the, you know, promotional materials and things. And we don't really see any scenes from either of them that overtly, I bet if we look back, we'll see some subtle scenes here and there where there's some interactions, maybe with the Admiral or whatever, but they didn't really set that up, but I don't remember them doing anything that counters it, so I'm fine with it.
So in this episode, and it was kind of subtle, but when I was looking back, it kind of seems it seems like it's kind of elfy, not fat.
Elfy,
no,
you got elfy food.
When
why don't you run up the old apples and pears?
When Mariner is typing into the program thingy, she writes interior, and Boimler's reading, she goes, interior, rickety catwalk, night? You can't write that about the captain. I was so confused until I saw the movie and then watched it a second time. I was like, oh, like, I had no idea what joke they were making. But then after that, the clue to the thing is, if he Boimler goes, if Freeman sees this, you'll get court-martialed. And so that's like a sort of like a stretch for a clue, because why would a mother court-martial her own daughter? I mean, if she was a pro, like,
no,
you would assume
no,
that they would.
She wasn't saying she'd court-martial the daughter. I think she was saying she would court-martial the person who found out. That's how I seem to recall it. She was saying, if somebody found out, I would court-martial that person.
The line was, after after Mariner started like writing in all the things, the movie, after Boimler noted that he was like, Mariner, you can't write that about the captain, he goes, if Freeman sees this, you'll get court-martialed. That's what he said.
If Freeman sees this,
that was
he'll get court-martialed.
He says, Boimler says, if Freeman, to Mariner, he goes, if Freeman sees this, you'll get court-martialed. He says that directly to Mariner. as she's programming in some extra.
Oh no, but that's different. I don't. He didn't catch the secret then.
No. Okay, I'm sorry.
He was saying she'd get court-martialed for you know writing some weird offensive stuff.
I absolutely know. Because he didn't catch it till the very end of the episode, like I said.
Oh, yeah,
my point
you,
was, my point was like, it maybe a hint that he doesn't know that she's her daughter, because like, you know, technically, it doesn't matter if you're related or not. You should,
I get
you
what
you're court martial.
He clearly doesn't know. You're
he
right.
He clearly doesn't know because it's like, why would he would take into account the fact that they're related and be like, maybe he wouldn't say, court martial. He'd be like, you'll get in big trouble, you know.
So you're gonna get in big trouble, boy.
Big trouble. But
Watch out.
I think that's a stretch, though. I don't think that that's a good.
I think it was so subtle that I was confused, but you have explained it very, very well.
Sweet.
I get to go watch the episode a fourth time.
Hooray!
Yay! Oh, for a moment.
No, I did that on purpose.
For a moment, that was golden.
I did that on purpose because I wanted to go. I wanted to make it. I wanted to hear the dissonance. You know, when you go, hey.
Dan is a fan of dissonance. I'm a fan of any music where you kind of go up or down a half step.
Yeah,
that's, you know,
chromatic.
Like that Hey Dotsi in the Sholay in that Indian Western movie.
Yeah, that one.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's a very good movie. I think it was like number one in the Indian theaters for 10 years or something.
Prior to her writing all that info in, she goes, wait, this is a perfect simulation? She's asking the question. And then she gives that diabolical laugh. She looked like the fucking Grinch from Grinch.
Yes. Yeah.
Grinch Stole Christmas. I think they did that on purpose.
I bet they did too.
I bet they did. How do you do on purpose? How do you express that to the animators to like do that? I guess you have to do it in the.
I bet they know that.
They have the story.
Not Jim Carrey style.
Because they have
Toucan Sam style.
I can't even remember if I saw the Jim Carrey one.
I think it was like, wasn't the same guy who did the Toucan Sam voice? I could be wrong about that.
But I know they have storyboards, but
you're
I don't know.
An evil, it seems Mr. Grinch.
I know they have storyboards, but like, how do you fill in all the in between on a storyboard for somebody who's maybe never seen the show? I don't know. Animation's impressive. You know, it's cool.
It is a complicated and interesting process.
Yeah. So, anyway, so she makes the movie.
Whenever you type on those keys, like there's like thunder.
Yeah, it's true.
You're like making thunder on the keyboard.
Sorry.
I think you just put like a towel underneath it. It'd be fine.
You're a towel.
You're a... Put a towel on it. Put a towel on it, baby.
How's this?
That's better.
It doesn't make the thundery lumps.
It's not doing that like...
Sorry, it was because it was uneven and it was bumping against...
It's all good.
It's like, is there a giant creeping up on us?
I'm sorry.
Like dinosaurs or something.
They're going to court-martial me.
So I remember before the podcast and I was talking about why if there's a joke in there about how there's no San Clemente ship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what was the rest of that?
I think that was it.
If there's like a reason, if there's something about San Clemente, and I don't know anything.
So in other words, they
know,
have all
I don't
these...
know enough about California to know if that's a San Clemente joke, or if that's just, they're just naming a random place.
Yeah. The absence of San Clemente.
It looks like San Clemente is one of those parts of California that's a little bit more conservative than others, but...
Do you think they've got a USS...
Probably some inside joke.
Do you think they've got a USS Clamato?
Maybe.
You know what Clamato is,
yeah,
right?
It's like one of them tomato...
Tomato juice with like clam juice in it.
Clam juice.
I don't fully understand it. It seems to be very popular.
And then the it's guy like we know much. Was drinking the beer that had the Clamato in it.
They do... I remember working at a place where they did Bloody Mary shots that had raw oyster.
See, I could go for that.
Yeah,
yeah.
I could go for
it's
that.
It's not bad. But the clam... Having a whole drink of clam is a lot of a little much.
Yeah.
Oysters are generally more mild than clam, so...
Especially like, clam that's been chilling with some tomatoes in a bottle for a while.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
the world is a strange and wondrous place.
So, yeah. So
allegedly.
Allegedly.
I like the, the music was, throughout the music was great, but I really liked the music when the credits were going. I thought it was a real kind of James Horner, Star Trek II, Star Trek III style music stings going. The composer has been doing a really great job this season because there is unique music in that unique's maybe not the best word, but sort of this show has its own flavor of music, but it also has mixtures of a lot of the 90s style TV Trek music mixed in with stings from TOS mixed in with now with this TOS movie style, you know, especially the James Horner ones, which was the whole credit thing was goofy and amusing and a different use of the holodeck, which I enjoyed, a more creative use of the holodeck than we generally see.
They also had the signatures at the end, like it's Star yes. Trek VI.
Yeah, the Star Trek VI style signature. So, you know, they really got the Star Trek like TOS the vibe.
The shuttlecraft ride up to the ship.
Yeah, that was definitely a direct pull from, I can't remember which Star Trek.
That's the motion picture.
That's the motion picture,
There's also one where when they first go on the Enterprise A. When they get the Enterprise A, there's a shuttlecraft ride that's similar.
So
yeah, with a shuttlecraft ride where they're all crying about about what the heck?
Or hey, welcome to Canada, eh?
Yeah,
hey, no problem.
See where they were crying over the shit because it was so beautiful, and that was the motion picture.
And then there's the Enterprise when they in the first episode of Enterprise where like it's the two dudes.
Oh, it's a bit of a Star Trek trope. Yeah. Yeah. So the motion, this scene where they're. Where, first of all, not only are they combined a couple things here, right? Because they do all the lens flare stuff all over the place. That's Star Trek 2009.
And
right?
they, as the movie, they made it like film. They did all the black splotty splots.
They did the all that stuff, which was good. So it's widescreen, lots of lens flares. But that opening scene where they're not opening scene, making me think of the opening scene. That is a parody mostly of the motion picture.
Are you talking about when they went to Cabo Lake or
no,
after that?
No, I'm talking about when the shuttle is slowly going around and it keeps going forever and ever. And it was a real Star Trek joke because I was laughing my ass off as it kept going on longer and longer and the music like kept dying out and then swelling back. Yeah. My wife was very confused because she is not a Star Trek fan per se. So she was like, I don't know.
At least not a real fan.
Exactly. So I didn't.
Just kidding.
I was laughing and she was confused as to why I was laughing. But yeah, it's the motion picture is the main parody of this because that one really Robert Wise, you know, he directed Sound of Music. He was trying to do his version of 2001 with the motion picture, and so it was a really long, drawn out thing. But they do similar things in Star Trek II, in Star Trek III, when they're stealing the Enterprise and getting chased by the Excelsior. There's some similar kind of vibe to it. And then what Jesse was referring to is at the end of Star Trek IV, when they first are, you know, finding out what ship they're going to be assigned to, and it turns out it's the Enterprise A. Then that they have a similar kind of like beauty shot, and the Enterprise Discovery has done it a little bit and on a couple points. So it's a Star Trek-y thing that they really pushed to the limits and then added in all the lens flares.
And even the shot of Douglas Station, it didn't look like it was in the tradition of Lower Decks animation.
Just it looked beautiful.
I don't know what you call that. Is it a matte background, or is there a term for that? I don't know. Just when it's just the drawing of the background or whatever.
I think that is a matte.
It is a matte. It looked like that. It looked like it was a,
it except like
nowadays
that
they
matte.
Nowadays they use Brian backgrounds.
Brian. Oh, yes. Colin backgrounds.
They
some
back
people
in the
call
day,
Colin
they
backgrounds.
They used to use Steve backgrounds.
Steve. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
But I mean, it wasn't a matte in the sense that.
Get out of my house, Steve!
It still had a cartoony look.
That's an Urkel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Steve and Urkel.
It still had a cartoony look. It didn't look exactly like a matte from like the movies.
But it was more cinematic.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I got a real kick out. Everything they did, I got a kick out of. The subtle but clearly high effort job they put into giving this filmic cinematic sheen to an already fairly cinematic show. You know, it is a TV sitcom, so it's not filmed it's not filmed like a movie, but it does have that good vibe to it, right?
There's also the Shakespeare quotes, like, but it's like the Tempest.
Yeah, you just quote the Tempest.
Yeah, that's
there's a, you know,
hell is empty and all the devils are here.
Shakespeare bits in Star Trek.
Yeah, and that's one I don't think we've heard before in Star Trek. I think that's my
it's not usually the
Tempest, I think it might have been quoted. It reminded me of Event Horizon of all things.
Do you think Admiral and Admire are part of the same thing?
Yes, and they're both from Arabic.
Okay, well, question answered.
Yeah,
algebra as
what,
well.
What about basilisk and Basque?
I have no idea. I'm basilisk, not familiar with Basque. That particular linguistic branch.
That might be a coincidence. So, yeah, so...
Well, I mean, since we're speaking about the... We mentioned that there is this parody of the motion picture. The other little joke that they slipped in there was, you know, Mariner saying something along the lines of, like, you don't want to be a Zahn.
Yeah.
And he's like, who's Zahn?
Oh, yeah, Zahn.
So Zahn was a character... I mean, probably many people listening are already aware of this, but Star Trek, the original series... It got canceled after three seasons. It got canceled after two, got brought back for one, got finally canceled after three seasons, but then ended up being very popular in reruns. So the studio, they started talking about it. They're like, oh, we'll bring it back and we'll do Star Trek Phase 2. That was the, I'm sure that wouldn't be the end title.
Do you think it got popular overseas? Do you think they sent them overseas back then?
I'm sure they did.
What brought back a lot. Well, I don't know. Can't name anything.
Yeah, I don't know how. I don't know enough details about the business of network television in the 1970s to know if overseas yeah, sales kind of a, would be
so how'd they do it
sufficient. It might be, it could put them over yeah. the edge, but they were going to bring back Star Trek and with Phase 2, but Leonard Nimoy at that point did not want to do it. So he was refusing to join the project, but Shatner was willing to come back as were I think some of the other characters. So they were going to replace Nimoy with a new character, new Vulcan character, I believe full Vulcan. And his name would be Zahn. And they cast an actor, and I mean, they did all this prep work. But what ended up happening is Star Wars became popular, and the studio decided they want to make a Star Trek movie. And so Roddenberry just sort of converted a lot of that pre-production work over into what eventually became the motion picture. So the motion picture is essentially an extended version of what would have been the pilot for Star Trek Phase 2, about the Enterprise meeting God. Something that we made, sent away, and then comes back as if it's a god, right? So Zahn was actually supposed to then be in the motion picture, and I think they filmed scenes with the guy, because they had like already hired him and promised him he was going to be on a TV show, but they ended up cutting all those scenes out. So if they filmed anything, it didn't end up in the movie.
Poor guy.
Not much. I think they mentioned him maybe in Star Trek 2 or something. He was referenced at some point later, at least once. But yeah, so that's what that's about. Don't be a Zahn.
Around that same time, Mariner was talking about how she was like, oh, you'll love this. Like, Tendi all wanted to be like the voice of the ship, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And she was like, you'll love this, an Orion warrior or something. And that, of course, Tendi was looking absolutely, completely uncomfortable the entire time, which I thought was awesome. I thought that was like really nice.
It was really great, especially how they resolved that.
Like, even when she was a background shot, she's always just kind of like, when she's not the focus, she's always just like, this, you know?
It's almost the case of when you get too comfortable with a friend and you forget yourself and how they might feel, especially with Mariner. She was being so self-focused. I won't say selfish, because I don't think she's not a particularly selfish person in the traditional sense of the term, but she can do things that end up, the effect is that they're selfish, because she's particularly in this episode so preoccupied with her particular game she's playing with her mom. So she didn't, you know, she was taking advantage of her friend and going a little bit further than she really should have reasonably done, and not noticing that it was negatively affecting her friend.
Yeah, and one of the things, I mean, it probably would have happened sooner or later. Who knows? It's someone else wrote it. But like, what kind of pushed it over the edge was sort of going along those same lines of her sort of losing Tendi, or not Tendi, Mariner losing herself when she came in with that, using the Borg head as some techno shield, and she throws it like a head grenade at Shax, and then Shax just blows up. Mariner really sort of forgets like her focus, you know, and that's when she's offended by the religious disrespect of wearing his earring, and plus the fact that there's ear gore all over it.
Just a chunk of ear.
And that's when, and she's blowing people up, and she's like, dude, this is getting a little bit too like personal and weird. And indulgent, and then I think that's when she also is like, and this Orion shit's bullshit, you know, what was it at the end of the episode? She goes, she has the talking about Orions, or she's a lot of Orions are capitalist, hyper libertarian, gangster pirates, but not this one,
not this one. I do enjoy that they both gave her the opportunity to define herself in opposition to the stereotype that her people live under, but then also undercuts it somewhat by saying, you know, a lot of Orions haven't been pirates for at least 5 years. Because it's also true that you want to maintain the Orions out there as a potential interesting character to interact with in a slightly evolved form, perhaps, but you still want to have a little bit of fun with them. It's the same thing with the Klingons. The Klingons in TOS were just straight up awful. And then the Klingons in TNG, you know, they were now allies, but they were still Klingons, right? So you could still have those Klingon killing each other, doing crazy stuff that we humans would consider a little bit crazy.
Humans.
Yeah. And it's also, I mean, it's, you know, and it's nice to have that a group might have a reputation based upon certain things from the present or the past, but like when she said, not this one, it's, you know, being like, you don't fucking know until you meet the person what the deal is. So, you know.
Now, did you catch the very subtle weed joke?
Yes, I did.
In this episode?
Yes.
I didn't catch it until I think the third time I watched it.
I got on the second.
Oh, I didn't catch it at all.
Shall you, Dan, or do you want me?
Go for it. You do it.
So it's when Rutherford, in disguise, you know, as his character of the whatever, what was he called?
Bionic Five.
Bionic Five.
Yeah, Bionic Five.
And he was like all pain, right? when he's interacting with Billups, Hollow Billups, and then he, you know, he helps him solve this problem where the gas is coming in, the plasma gas is coming into the. You know, into the engineering room, and Billups says, you know, we don't have enough time to correct it.
Rerouting the vents would take a whole team.
Yeah, so Rutherford says, if we bypass the Indy controls and suppress the SATI vents, it should function as a rudimentary plasma filter. But yeah, the Indy controls and suppress the sativents.
Indy controls sativents. Sativents. It's hard to say.
Sativents.
Yeah.
Race.
This is like a really kind of like an arbitrary weed joke, but it is kind of funny.
It was very arbitrary.
Yeah, but it's kind of funny. It's like, let's just take some technobabble and just show how ridiculous technobabble can be.
I didn't catch it till the third time I was watching, and the reason it works is because they slipped a joke into technobabble. They're like, it's gobbledygook. We can put whatever we want in here. And let's make some extra layers of jokes with it. Because the joke already was that it was so nerdy what he was doing, you know, and that they talked at the same time and they were all like getting all buddy buddy.
Yeah, it's funny because he was all like, you know, I can finally tell him what I think of him, you know, and of course, joke being is like, you're going to tell him piece of shit, but he's going to profess his platonic or not love for him. I guess we assume platonic, but it doesn't really matter. It's just his love for him. Yeah. There's no reason to specify.
Well, and Billups is he's an interesting character because he's not even part of the main crew, really, in the sense, and I don't mean main crew, I mean main cast. I think they usually list him as a guest star.
Yeah, and he's not always part of the upper deckers like scenes.
Which is more true to what you'd expect an engineer to do, but they've been using him a lot. And in this episode, I mean, I don't know, the whole thing with, again, going back to the, you know, shuttle slowly going around the Cerritos, where at first he's just looking in awe, then he starts tearing up, and then by the end of it, he's just bawling.
Yeah.
I mean, just tears pouring down, and he's kind of almost shaking from how much he's crying.
Yeah, and then it sort of reinforces what you said about him not being part of everything. Because at the end, when Rutherford is just like stone cold badass, and he's just there looking all sad.
He looks so sad and lonely, eating his soup.
Yeah.
He's eating replicated soup, and there's something. Okay, if I'm on a starship and I have a replicator, and I love soup, I'm probably going to eat soup a lot. But there's something.
I'm probably going to. Oh, you mean if you're on a starship? I thought you were just like for the rest of your life. I haven't decided.
If I'm on a starship, in real life, I will of course eat soup. But filmically, the filmic language of somebody eating replicated soup, is depressing.
Because it's just this liquid. It reminds you of just gruel.
It's like, why are you even bothering? You know, the replicator. You could just get a powdered pack and make some soup. I mean, the replicator, you should be having a steak or a lobster or something crazy like that.
So I guess Rutherford and that says the thing about confidence. You know, they say people are attracted to confidence, and that of course is true. People can sense confidence, but also the other side of it is, if you're confident, you're not going to give as much of a shit if someone's like, fuck you. You're like, okay, well, fuck you too. And so you say, and so you're not afraid to say the shit you really mean and not say it. And that's where the people detect the confidence, because you don't say it timidly.
Yeah.
You just say it like, fuck, if you don't like it, I don't like it. And you say the shit you mean to begin with. And of course, Rutherford and Billups were going to be, you know, best friends for life. And you know, but now after in the real world, he's like, oh no, no, he's too cool for me. Like, that was like a fucking like personal log simulation, like kind of shit. And you know, still don't believe it, you know, it's
but
confidence.
Confidence is so contextual. And I think a lot of people forget that, or, you know, it's certainly something that is not well presented in the movies. The, not that movies are bad. There are plenty of movies that are good, but the nature of them is they tend to streamline people's personalities and things. It's like you're confident versus unconfident.
Or, there was the hollow Billups too.
But the thing with confidence is that somebody like Rutherford or Billups, they're very confident in certain areas. They're very confident if they're talking about esoteric engineering stuff, right? But in other contexts, they may not be confident. The same is true of Mariner, who might be described as a confident character, yet we see her in a number of cases where that confidence is shaken because it's not exactly the scenario that she's well suited to. She's great when it comes down to fighting people. If the answer is I have to fight people and or solve a problem within the span of 2 minutes, great. But if it's interacting with certain people or having certain responsibilities or having too much time to accomplish a mission, then she gets her mind space is a little bit different. So it's always funny to me when somebody says like that person's so confident. Right. It's like, yeah, but in what, like at work, at school, in their personal, like where are they confident and where are they not so confident, and find out where they're not confident and undermine them.
Well, simulated Mariner was
strategies for success in the office.
Yeah.
In the career work face.
It's all fucking games. Like simulated Mariner, when she approached quote unquote real Mariner, I guess, even though she was like going a little insane, even said herself, like, you know, everyone expects you to break the rules and be like, you know, and be this person who like doesn't give a shit. But the truth is it's hard to be. You're afraid of the challenge of working yourself up. And that's a confidence issue, because she did and she got rejected. And so now it's like working yourself up again, you know, falling down and pick yourself back up. It's like she just wants to sort of be like, okay, well, I don't want to deal with that again. So I'm just going to be the best rebel I can be. And the, you know, and best happy-go-lucky kind of like, hey, it's all good, man. But still keeping in mind that she ultimately wants to help the people. But that's sort of where her confidence is threatened in that area.
Mm-hmm. And I look forward to learning more. I think it's a continuing thread that we'll see with Mariner. We still want to learn more, if we learn more about why she was demoted in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had some discussion about what may have led to that in the different scenarios. Most of the ones we discussed were ones that were revealed Mariner to be noble, and that for one reason or another, those events maybe have affected her confidence to a certain degree, because she obviously was promoted before and didn't resist it. She's resisting it now. She doesn't want to go back to whatever scenario she was in previously. We just don't have enough details. We have a few clues. We're building up a base of clues. We learn a lot more in this episode, but we're not quite there yet.
We learned that every Halloween she was Toby Targ.
Yeah.
Even when she was too old.
Or was that her, or was that Boimler?
No, it was her.
That was her?
That was when she was talking to herself.
Oh yeah, when she was talking about how you're actually
Toby Targ.
Actually kind of like a Starfleet nerd, or like not a Starfleet nerd in that respect, but kind of like, you know, you have that side of you. Because she it was kind of introduced last week a little bit. This was the first time they really mentioned her interest in Starfleet, was when Tendi got to clean the conference room. She got to be the cleaner of the conference. And then, you know, she was like secretly like, I want to clean the conference room. And you're like, wait a minute, since when did you care about that?
Mm-hmm.
And then she was talking about how warp cores are, you love warp cores. You think they're totally cool. Which, and that's like a throwback to the first episode. No, first or second.
I think it was the first episode, yeah. Because Boimler was all about the warp core and she was playing like she didn't like it.
Yeah.
But there was a hint, I think, I could be imagining it, but I seem to recall that there was a hint in the first episode that you could tell that she did think the warp core was cool, but she didn't think it was cool to say the warp core was cool.
Yeah, so she definitely got, she definitely gives, the reason she gives for not going back up to the upper decks or whatever is because she just thinks they're bullshit and you can't get done what you're supposed to.
But
that's just kind of a ruse because she just is, well, I mean, it's probably part true, but that's also an aspect of her just sort of like trying to hide the truth. When Boimler, when Mariner's making that holodeck program, Boimler thinks she's doing it for fun. Mm-hmm. But she's secretly doing it for therapy. Now, yes. First of all, we don't know if Dr. Moogity-Boo or whatever, we don't know if he recommended that or if that was just her own personal
therapy.
Oh,
no, that was her own personal thing. She you saw on her face, she got the idea when he said, this is a perfect simulation.
Yeah, I guess how would she predict that?
Yeah, in her mind, retroactively, we can understand, oh, this is a perfect simulation of everybody, including my mom standing right there. Okay, I can now challenge my mom through a simulation because she's too scared to confront her mom directly with these questions, right? I what I thought was really brilliant about this whole thing, other than being, I thought, very fun and entertaining, some great visual and music, auditory, references to previous Trek.
Audio references.
But doing their own thing, in addition to all that, it was a funny episode. It was tightly written. It was a fun sci-fi concept because they used the holodeck in a way that was a little bit different.
Wasn't the standard fucking holodeck nonsense.
Like I said earlier, it wasn't the holodeck going crazy. It was the crewmen going crazy.
Although they gave a weird holodeck reference at the very end that didn't really make any sense. But
that way, I did like that. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
But the thing is overall, what this story was an example of Mariner, in this case, using film, using media as a heightened version of real life in order to examine her own real life, right? It was real meta in that way because that's precisely what Star Trek is. I mean, it's what all fictional movie is to one degree or another, but Star Trek is in that family of art where it has the purpose of, generally speaking, most episodes, right? You're trying to examine something about the human condition, and you're using science fiction, you're using the exaggerated things you can do in filmic language, which they reference repeatedly in here, especially Rutherford saying, you can do this, it's a movie, you can do this,
you can do more stuff with more beaming stuff.
Like you said,
all sorts of beaming stuff.
She's using it to analyze the human condition, but the extra twist is that she's using it to analyze herself, which then leads to that really fun and interesting battling your twin situation, which we've seen in Star Trek before, but this was a bit of a different vibe because this was a holographic recreation of her from her personal logs. It wasn't a transporter accident that splits you into two. It wasn't, another transporter accident that splits you into two, but one of them's like evil and one of them's good.
Yeah.
It wasn't one of those deals. It wasn't going to the mirror universe and encountering yourself. It was its own deal. And it was much more psychological in nature as opposed to, to be fair, some of the other ones had some psychological aspects, but this was more directly like, no, this is psychological therapy and analysis that she's doing right here.
They haven't really done anything on the holodecks where there's a character that is interacting with a holodeck version of themselves, right? That hasn't happened before.
Not much, no. I mean, you had Geordi seeing and Riker seeing holographic versions of themselves and being offended, but
I mean, they've done therapy of sorts with other people through other people, like Geordi with that scientist
that's
creepy.
Not therapy.
That wasn't therapy, but it was his attempt at solving a problem. He was trying to solve a problem, and it was creepy.
Fungili. She likes to eat fungili.
Yeah, that's cool. Didn't we find out
that was made up? Wasn't that like not a real thing?
I don't know.
That doesn't sound like a real pasta.
So
fungili.
Boimler, so what I was saying is Boimler, he thinks Mariner's just doing it for fun, just being typical Mariner, and she's doing it for therapy, like you said, but she can't even admit that to Boimler or anyone else, and she acts as if she's just doing it for fun, which is another example of proof that her fun-loving attitude is in part a ruse, that when she's going around. Because it seems, at the beginning, it's like, oh, is she really just... And this is... Shows go deeper on... Some shows go deeper than others on characters. Some shows would just keep it at the surface level. I'm not trying to say that this show is the deepest show in Starfleet or whatever. But I'm saying that... some shows would just leave it as Mariner is just, oh, she's the fun-loving type that shoots her butt at authority, or no, that didn't sound right. What is it? What shoots her? She wags her finger at authority, shakes her fist at authority.
Okay, that's what you got. I think you got there in the end.
Shakes, waving shakes the butt.
Her butt. He said shoots her butt.
Shoots her butt.
Which I liked. It's not a colloquialism.
So
I like it.
It's an interesting image.
So a lot of shows would just sort of stick it at, leave it at that, where she's just like, "Oh, that authority, but I'm still a good person." But this goes deeper and actually, you know, approaches the idea that, well, part of her that is true, but there's also that part of her that, you know, is hiding from herself and others.
And I also, it was great to see that when she was nice to her mom at the end and apologized, her mom immediately thought was suspicious and went to the doctor to try to like get information out of him. And that's when he told her she was being a real pineapple.
Yeah.
Because she was trying to get, you know, patient, you know, confidential information.
I like Shimpo.
Shimpo. Yeah, I like Shimpo.
He brings
too.
Her tea and she was like, "That was coffee." And then she kills him. And he's like, "I was Shimpo."
Yeah. Yeah, it was, and it was funny how she was like sort of trying to have this therapy with her mom, but her mom's not in on the sort of on the situation. So she's just like, "You think I'm a villain?" She's like, "You are a villain." And then she shoots her fucking helper. It's like, "What do you think I'm gonna be? You're putting up this image that you're a villain. You think everyone?
I don't know you.
Yeah, I don't know you." So it's like that was like she thinks everyone looks at her as a villain unfairly, but she's presenting herself as a villain because everyone think she's a villain or whatever.
I think I'm going to get more out of this in future watches. I get the impression that there are some really interesting layers here that I was only able to access a few, even though I watched the episode three times. Similar in some ways to the pickle.
I will watch it three times.
Yeah, three times. The Pickle Rick episode of Rick and Morty is somewhat like that, where on the one hand there's all these absurdities, but then it's sort of, you know, the denouement is this very touching, heartfelt, raw, very clearly written kind of concept. This isn't that. This is more smooth throughout the whole thing and a little bit more subtle. But I do get the impression that there are probably more layers to examine during the fight between, you know, Vindicta and her mom, you know, Captain Freeman, between her fight with herself and some other things. So I'm looking forward to checking it out again and seeing if there's even a little bit more there. But I don't know. It's just you watch it and you get the impression you're like, people put a lot of thought into this, and it works from the character perspective. It works from the show's perspective, and it was entertaining. It was also funny. And I think that's an impressive thing to do, because you can, and people sometimes complain about Rick and Morty in this case, you know, sometimes you can veer a little too maudlin, you know, or a little too cynical or a little too this. And thus far, I've been mostly pleased with how this show kind of, you know, threads the needle a little bit, gives you that funny stuff, but gives you some things to think about and some touching stuff too.
Bionic 5. He was half man meat, half robot meat.
When the
That's funny to think about is robot meat, right? Because like, because man meat, you know, we don't have something on us called meat. We have fat and muscle and all that stuff. And the meat is sort of, that's, you know, we have fat and it's just muscle and stuff, but it's not like we have another thing called meat.
Right.
So you could just call robot guts meat, right? I guess they call it circuitry. You know, silicon-based life, that's like, is that meat? That couldn't be meat.
Nah, it's plastic.
But silicone-based life, is that the same as a Data? I don't think so either. I don't know. Because Data wasn't grown or like, nobody else made. Like, can you have silicone-based life that makes itself? I guess you can. I guess that's the whole thing about sci-fi.
Possibly, yeah.
Well, sorry, what were you...
Silicon is right next to carbon.
I was going to say, when the Cerritos...
Well, gold is right next... Sorry. Gold is right next to lead, but that's, you can't turn lead into gold, so they're very different. You know.
I didn't say silicon wasn't different. I'm just saying silicon's next to carbon.
Okay, sorry.
For when you look at the study of astrobiology, they look into silicon partly because the molecule structures are in many ways very similar to the molecule structures of carbon for the substrate of life. Carbon is the substrate.
But I was just saying that just because they're next to each other doesn't
mean
they're...
100%. Okay. I agree.
I'm sorry, Jesse. That's my fault again.
A minor digression. Back to Jesse.
There's a point... There's what happens is the Cerritos jump to warp speed, and there's like some crackling lightning
yeah,
back
the
there.
The lightning effect.
Looks like it's from Back to the Future or something. Was that a nod to something else?
That was, I think it was the making the joke about how every time they do a movie, they overdo the warp effects.
Okay.
I did like how Captain Freeman was her, you know, because there was discussion earlier in the season about what her catchphrase should be. Because, you know, Picard has engage.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know, Pike has, you know, what was Pike's do it or something? Or
do it.
Let's go or something.
Oh, yeah.
Or wasn't Janeway do it or something?
Let's kick a Mickey.
But yeah, warp
oh,
me.
Oh, let's hit it?
Hit it. I think
what Pike
says? Pike was hit it. I think yeah. Janeway was do it or something. And but here her movie catchphrase is warp me. It's like, it's so stupid. Because Freeman was, remember there was that one episode where she was actually in the hallway discussing. She was trying to come up with a warp slogan.
Oh, right. And that's when that thing goes inside of her. The little glowy thing.
Speaking of the hallway, there was sort of another arbitrary bit where there was some person saying she liked that dude's one-act play or one-man, one-act play.
Oh, Winger Bingston Jr.?
Was that Winger Bingston Jr.?
Yeah, that
Jr.?
Was Winger Bingston Jr.
And then they get crushed.
Yeah, like he totally just gets crushed.
It was just like, fuck you and your bullshit.
Your one-man show.
One-man show. Because
remember there was that other episode where he was doing his one-man show?
Yeah.
It was when
United Federation
okay.
of Characters.
Mariner and right. Tendi were playing some, right. were rocking out on some tunes.
I totally forgot that part. Totally missed that. Like a total jerk. I'm a jerk. Then there's the other aspect of the sort of where Boimler's sort of, this is a, not really approached that much, but where Boimler is trying to figure out what the captain likes. So far, because all we got from that is she doesn't like when you say ahoy. She likes it when you call the ship a handsome lady. And she's allergic to chocolate.
Yeah.
And which led to, hilariously, him getting like, you know, Jet gets Boimler again.
Hell yeah, Jet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and that scene where the ship fell from the sky, that was the most.
Oh, yeah, and it like rolled
up.
Like a wheel.
Yeah, it broke, and then it rolled like a wheel.
That was great.
But that led to Rutherford's like, sometimes when
warning, the ship is crashed.
So, yeah, warning, the ship is crashed, warning. So when you watch something, when one watches something and they see the way the line was delivered, you wonder if that was how it was supposed to be delivered. But when Rutherford goes like, you can beam whatever you want. You can do all sorts of beaming. Like it sounded like he just sort of like flubbed the line or something and tried to put it in there, just kept it in there, which is really good. I thought that was funny. But so what he did is he initiated a rapid repeating emergency transport sequence and beamed the entire crew before we crashed, which is a great idea. But it once again goes to the example of, we were talking before about the ridiculousness of when was it the previous last episode or the one before where Rutherford managed to speed up transport by half a second, but it made everyone like turn into like transport
right.
people. And so we're just wondering, like, how did they beam all those people? Like, why do you even need those transport?
Well, because it was the movie,
right. And right,
yeah,
and,
exactly.
Like,
but like
Star Trek 4, and they beam a bunch of whales on couple of whales on the ship, like,
right?
It's
and
like, it's like you do all this crazy shit.
Well, and but yeah, the point is that even outside of the movie, like a couple episodes prior, when Rutherford beamed all those people like off the planet. Into when they got in the transport, stuck in the transport buffer, or they didn't get stuck in the buffer, but they got transport bufferized or whatever. And that was when we had the whole discussion about
kind of extended buffer.
Yeah, that's when we had the whole discussion regarding, you know, the loose rules of the transporter. But but that's always, you know, the great idea is how do you, you know, just beam everyone before they hit the ground.
This is why they came up with the transporter in the first place. They designed this cool ship and then they were like, we don't know how the fuck to land this ship and how to show it on TV.
It'll,
so
make,
like,
a,
oh,
it'll make you two Rikers.
We can beam the people down.
You get two Rikers out of it.
What I thought was another...
You get a Scotty.
Another reference. It was a combined reference. They did a lot of combined references here. Sort of like the motion picture slow pan around the ship mixed with the Star Trek 2009 lens flares. There, they have the thing when the ship crashes, it's sort of a combination between Generations and Star Trek Beyond. Because in Generations, you know, there's an explosion, the ship kind of gets not, you know, hit, and it's like going to crash.
Yeah.
In the saucer, you know, saucer section is going to crash down on the planet.
And it left that ditch.
Yeah,
that,
and it left the ditch. But in Star Trek Beyond, the ship was doing more like, whoa, like, you know, going in between mountains and shit, yeah, you know, and crashing at like some weird ass angle that
was,
and shit.
And that was a weird thing where the gravity changed and made no sense inside the ship.
Yeah.
Some people were walking this way and some people were walking that way. An article I was reading, just one article, I feel like maybe a couple of them were pointing to how it was kept referencing the J.J. Abrams Star Treks, and it did, like you just said, but...
The lens flare primarily.
Yeah, I felt there was, like, we already talked about how it referenced, you know, the non-alternate universe, whatever they call it nowadays.
Star Trek 1, Star Trek 2, Star Trek 3, Star Trek 4, and Star Trek 6 were all overtly...
Yeah.
Overtly referenced.
So, I was surprised when I read they thought it was like a J.J. Abrams, like... reference.
I think that those people are not real Star Trek fans.
They're not real. Fucking get rid of them.
No, I think they're real people. I think they're not real Star Trek fans.
That's what I mean, is they're not real fans, so we get rid of them.
I think they're just,
kick them out of our message boards. Do we still have a message board?
No, we don't have a message board.
Damn it.
We're just on Twitter.
Yeah.
And, it's know, got Instagram anger.
And Facebook. It's got anger. That would be kind of awesome. That'd be a great
it's
podcast.
It's got
Dan's just like,
rage.
I'm so pissed off today because of this thing.
Yeah.
And I'm going to talk about it.
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah,
it's
people
not a bad idea.
People could listen to podcasts of people complaining about their own shit, and they could be walking along doing a power walk and be like, "You're right, Dan. Fuck that lady at the flower shop."
We can complain about other podcasts.
Yeah. Let's make enemies. It's got making enemies. You know, going back to how Mariner seemed kind of one-sided in that whole thing where she's yelling at Freeman, and Freeman kind of seemed like the victim in that whole scenario. She did give a line, or kind of gave away. It's like Freeman's not perfect either. She goes, her line was, I'm overflowing with love and affection. I can't remember where she said that, if it was in the hologram or if it was to the therapist. It might have been to the therapist. I can't remember.
No, it was a hologram.
It was a hologram. And that's kind of like Freeman thinks she's being like really great and loving, but she might be kind of overbearing.
Yes.
And so that's kind of an admission.
And I think Mariner phrased it well when she was fighting with herself, basically saying, your mom is taking care of you in the best way she knows how. It's an overbearing, obnoxious way.
Since she was 8.
But that's the way she knows how, basically.
I wonder if we'll find out what happened at 8 or if that was just the
because
time.
She is a Starfleet captain.
When kids reach 8, do they become more like, is there some kind of cognitive step they take at around 8 years old? Because they have these cognitive steps.
They might. I don't know. I have two children. One is just under 8 and one is above 8. Mm. But other than that, I don't know.
Maybe you'll know looking back.
I might know looking back. I didn't keep very good records or charts.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
There's no reason to really. With the Mariner, that whole therapy thing is Mariner didn't even know she was gonna like meet herself in that whole thing too. So that was serendipitous. I noticed that when there was the timer going down on the ship exploding, it only showed the timer for that 1 second where it was zoomed in.
Yeah.
And then it zoomed out. I looked at that like a few times. I was like, nope, it's not there. It just appeared. So, you know, it's a holodeck.
But it was a cool ending. It resolved
well.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. It didn't matter.
And then, of course, I did like when Boimler goes to his interview and at this stage he's all nervous. But something really tickled me about Freeman asking him, where do you see yourself negotiating peace in 5 years?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's such an absurd question.
Yeah, I know.
But it's the exact kind of dumb question. Like, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
It's amazing. Cause
it's
like,
a dumb question.
You know, one grows up watching, absorbing media, and it might give someone a skewed view of what reality actually is. Everything is just a caricature and an exaggeration. But in this case, like, no, that shit happens. And, like, you'll come across... If one goes to enough job interviews, they will hear dumbass questions like that. And you're just like, I thought people laugh at those kinds of questions. Like, really? That doesn't tell anyone anything.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years? I'm, like, dancing on your grave and sleeping with your wife?
Yeah, what does that tell the employer, like...
Tells me that they're new at this.
It's like, well,
something.
I'm not going to be working here in 5 years. I'm going to be working somewhere else.
I've never been in a managerial position, so I don't know. But as someone answering questions, like, well, yeah, exactly. What is this?
I've been.
Right. It's like, if I'm not here in 5 years, does that mean I'm not worth the hire? I guess. I don't know.
I've been in the position I have hired people. I've been in the position to interview people. I've never asked that question because it's a terrible, stupid question.
Thank you.
I would be offended at any answer they provide. It's like, come on. You don't need to answer that.
The right answer is, why is this a question?
Yeah. All right. So I think we should wrap things up. So any final thoughts? Overall, I get the impression people seem to have enjoyed this episode.
Yeah,
I got a real kick out of it.
I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I thought it was good.
I like that they're using the animation. They kind of are alternating back and forth between doing, you know, giving us some comfortable Star Trek-y style plots with some humor and pathos, and then doing things that really stretch the sort of standard Trek tropes. Using the animation, you know, using the format, not just the comedy format that does let them stretch in certain directions, but also the animation format. We already commented on the sort of kinetic fight scenes and things. The fight scene between Mariner and Mariner, or mm-hmm. Mariner and Vindicta, was awesome.
Yeah.
And you know, especially that part where they both do the high leg kick and they're like holding it and they're like arguing with each other and their legs are shaking.
It's funny. She goes, there starts a fight with double punch.
Double punch.
Which is not to be mistaken. It's not to be confused with the double axe handle.
Yeah, double axe handle is different.
Which is different. That's double axe handle is first time I heard that term was in the movie No Holds Barred with Hulk Hogan, but it references the classic Star Trek clasp your hand fists together and punch him in a really stupid way. Right. But it was just a two punch, double punch, and then she blocked it with a double block.
Do you remember in
block? It's like Street Fighter.
In No Holds Barred, there's a scene where Hulk Hogan.
Yes, I know what scene. You're gonna
you know exactly what I'm talking about. Where he gets the limo driver,
Dookie,
and he pulls him out, and then the guy's all like crying, and then Hulk Hogan's like, "What's that smell?"
Yeah.
And the guy's like, "Dookie."
Yeah.
Because the guy that pooped his pants.
Yeah, it's so stupid.
And then Hulk Hogan does a look of disgust and kind of tosses him down.
Yeah, it was one of the better aspects of that movie. Yeah.
I highly recommend watching the movie. I do not highly recommend the movie.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
If you got to take it in parts, just try.
Watch the movie. Do not enjoy the movie.
Like, for example, I recommend that movie that people, recommend that people see it, but I don't recommend the movie. Unlike Suburban Commando, which you don't have to see.
Movies you don't have to see. Suburban Commando, you definitely do not have to see.
Hulk Hogan. It's like, you don't have to keep up with Hulk Hogan that much, but sometimes you want to check out and see what's going on.
Toxic Avenger, I can both recommend it to see it, and it's a good movie. You'll be grossed out and disgusted if you haven't seen it. But that's a trauma film, and I only mention it because it shares a passing similarity in a sort of syllable style to Suburban Commando.
Well, I'm thinking of David Bautista. He's like one of the best wrestlers two movies.
And he's a great actor. Yeah, he's a great actor.
Even though Dwayne Johnson is probably the richest actor in the universe.
But he's also good.
He's good, but I feel like Dave Bautista isn't better. His roles are
Dave
better.
Dave Bautista is a deeper actor.
Yeah.
But Dwayne Johnson's very charming. His role, his fucking thing as Maui and Moana is pretty fucking awesome. It makes it worth watching the whole movie. It's a good movie, but he really steals the show.
That's
not an Orion
joke. Do you remember that time that you stole the show, Dan?
Did I ever give it back?
You stole it right away. No, you haven't given it back since.
I'm a fucking asshole. Piece of shit.
Yeah. Use charm spells.
I just want to use some Rutherford technobabble. There's not much. One of them was, I just want to replace a Turanian ops module with ionizing subcircuits. They're always talking about subcircuits. Yeah. No, they're always talking about subroutines. They do mention subroutines somewhere, I thought. Or do they... What is it? So aren't they talking?
Yeah, no, he talks. I think he may be talking about, like, you program the best subroutines in Starfleet or something.
Yeah, he says that to Billups.
I love how you program your subroutines.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's breathtaking. Yeah, that was it. And they talk about subcircuits. And then when he's talking to Billups about what they're going away together, actually, I think Billups says this, or maybe they're talking in a conversation back and forth, but it's like, but for the phase coil, we can realign the matrix. We can fix the warp engines on our time.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that means they're going to do it more or less. I imagine more, but...
up there, it's their time.
And the cat law says something like, you crazy bleeps. Crazy couple of bleeps.
Yeah. I can't wait for... Well, I'm looking forward to an episode where Colonel Cat gets a little bit more of a focus.
You're still pushing that.
I'm really trying to get it.
Cat in a coat.
Cat in a coat. One day it'll come through.
And then, and I already said the Rutherford one about the crashing. Oh, we were going to talk about the Leonardo da Vinci's thing at the end, which
was
good,
goofy.
But it was so goofy because
not
Mariner,
that da Vinci's watch.
Because it was kind of like,
God damn.
What are you saying?
I don't know. This...
So, pardon me, folks. We live in the Washington, D.C. area, and there seems to be a rash of microstrokes going around. We've all, over the last few weeks, I dealt with it last week. So please pardon, Dan. It's not COVID. Don't worry.
They're a result of microsingularities.
Yeah. Pastor. There's a bunch of microsingularities. They're coming out of the NIH.
There's a bunch of holes.
Yeah. NIH is doing physics now for some reason.
That some people think that's just some hypothetical bullshit the Vulcans made up, but I think it's true. I think there's enough evidence to suggest that microstrokes. Actually, there's Frankie Muniz had a bunch of microstrokes. I'm crossing the line a little bit on this one. Yeah, never mind.
It's a real thing. People, if you have sickle cell disease, for example.
I'm an asshole.
Little kids with microstrokes.
I'm sorry.
People thought the Vulcans made it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the microsingularities, I think.
They didn't give us Warp 5 either.
No, they were dicks about it.
Yeah, the Vulcans are kind of, you know, what are you going
to
do?
Okay, so like, this is what I meant to get at is when you're talking about... One of the things I like about the episode that we already mentioned is that it's a holodeck episode, but it's not the usual shit where the holodeck goes awry and fucks everyone up for no reason. And it just, it's like after the fifth time, you got to be like, are these things really worth having around? This wasn't that. This was therapeutic. The holodeck did good things.
Yeah. It did good.
Did good.
You did good, so, holodeck. Good job.
Good show.
Good show. You holodeck, you've done a good show today.
So
the holodeck was sort of secondary that they were using the holodeck. It was just
they were using the holodeck as a tool.
It was right. They were actually using it as something you're supposed to use.
It was like a training tool, and then she modified it, but it was still effectively a training tool.
So the last scene where
Boimler still got a little bit out of it.
So the last scene where Da Vinci Mariner lands.
Vindicta.
See, that's the thing is, it was kind of almost poking fun at the standard holodeck episodes because it's like, how is this possible? Because Vindicta landed, but Vindicta was never a holodeck character. Yeah. Vindicta was Mariner. The holodeck character was the simulation of Mariner. So why is Vindicta landing down there? And it's kind of like the holodeck went awry, you know?
Maybe Mariner wrote about the incident in her personal logs and Boimler's thing sucked it in and made that character...
There you go.
Could be.
It works. And then Da Vinci shot her dead. So.
Yeah, but it was all Star Trek 2 / Star Trek 3 style.
Yeah.
And then, not on my watch.
Yeah.
Not on Da Vinci's watch, I think is what he said.
Because it's like the Genesis planet or something.
Yeah. It's like Spock's torpedo tube.
Spock torpedo.
So yeah, it was a goofy scene, but I thought it's pretty cool.
It's also kind of funny because of the fact that the scene it's parodying is sort of this really melancholy combination of sadness and hope. You know, when you see the funeral of Spock, one of the saddest scenes in Star Trek cinema history, when Kirk gives his little speech about, you know, of all the souls I've known in this universe, his was the most human. And then they launch it and it lands, soft lands on the thing, giving you a little bit of hope. And that was edited. Kind of sad. So they refilmed it. They added it onto the ending and added Leonard Nimoy doing his voiceover. Anyway.
And then he came back.
When I listened to Boimler saying captain, I was like, is he saying cap'n? And like, I looked at the closed captioning and it was CAP apostrophe.
He totally is.
And he's been doing that for a while.
And he did it like a lot more in this episode. Like, he's been doing it throughout.
Cap'n.
I think he maybe did it by mistake in the first episode and increasingly since he's been calling her cap'n.
It's been like more and more.
When they came back from the holodeck, Boimler gets it again. For whatever reason, the holodeck makes him fall. Boimler
gets it again.
The holodeck makes Boimler fall a few feet when they get back. Which is like, why would the holodeck
He's falling a lot in this
one. Attack Formation Raptor. That was from Ransom. I like when they just... I want to know what Attack Formation Raptor.
Oh, there was a lot of, you know, like when the guy was, I forget exactly what he said. He was like something about like, no, bitch, or something like that. You know, it was like a weirdly aggressive Starfleet officer that Vindicta ended up shooting down. And there was the Irish guy.
He said something about Dirty O'Ryans.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's like, hey.
You Dirty O'Ryans.
Hey.
Lundy.
Yeah, Lundy. He was like, he even got his accent and his splotchy face. That's fucked up.
You Dirty O'Ryans.
Oh, yeah, and then Tendi's like, we have to hench. You know, it's like the Simpsons is like, what is it? Like, they call them fingers, but we never see them fing.
Oh, yeah.
They have to hench because they're henchmen. Yeah. But Jesse, it's Jesse. What do you have to say?
I think I said it all. I liked it when the ship crashed and it rolled like a wheel. I liked Winger Bingston Jr.
Always like him.
Shempo, later skater. And I was going to say something about the Cap'n bit, but you totally beat me to it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You totally beat his ass,
I forgot about it, and then you did it. So that was that.
That was good. Cabo Lake was the command retreat.
Oh, there's a thing. How can I be the man, Captain? I want to be the man.
Yeah, I know, right? And that's Jet. We saw Jet again.
Yeah.
Jet was in that episode with his girlfriend, Gillian Jacobs.
Yeah.
Gillian.
Gilly, for short.
Gilly, yeah. Or Liam. Sometimes Liam, because no one remembers Liam. And everyone thinks she's a guy, because it's like Liam.
No one says that.
Oh, I wanted to think, the one thing about, it was weird at the end when Freeman, hologram Freeman, says, if anyone knows that, she's my daughter, I'm going to have them court-martial them right out of Starfleet. And, it's supposed to be a pretty good representation of these people, so...
But you have to remember, first of all, this is based off of her personal logs, so it's something she might have written or conveyed
in anger,
her personal logs,
out
right?
of emotion or something?
Personal logs are not the same thing as the main captain's logs. Secondly, again, the construction of it...
Maybe they didn't train their AI models properly, and they took it out of context.
But the construction of it wasn't, I 100% would do this, it was... Oh, I feel that I would if I had been caught. I'm glad that that's over now, because now that scenario won't come up to test me to see if I would do something so ridiculous. So, that was the way I interpreted it.
So you don't think it could be any evidence that she's a little bit like, what's the word, nepotistic? Like a little corrupt with nepotism?
No, I don't think so. I think it's because it's not that they would get mad at.
Because why is Boimler freaked out? Why should he care? I mean, if he's, because he must actually be worried that she's going to court martial him out of Starfleet.
He cares because he's Boimler. Yeah, if somebody else had learned this, I mean, Tendi or Rutherford would probably not give a damn. They'd think it's a curiosity. They might bring it up, but they're not going to worry about it. Even after hearing what Freeman said, I don't think they would worry so much about it, because they'd figure quite correctly, I think, that it's just, it's the type of thing a mom would say blowing off steam.
Yeah, Boimler is the one that was worried about being too eager to please.
Because the point of Freeman's statement was not to protect Mariner, it was almost out of embarrassment. She was conveying, I don't want people to know this, so I would get mad at the person who discovered it to keep the secret going. That's why she would court-martial them. That's why she was trying to get them away. And again, the way I think she was conveying it was not that it was an actual thing she would do, because there are obviously some problems with that if you're trying to keep a secret.
She
right?
definitely conveyed that it would be an annoying thing for somebody to have to deal with, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay. That scene.
Notice how Tendi has like white boots and like everybody
else. All the science people have white boots.
Yeah. It's like the other guys have black boots, but it's got like a red bit or a yellow bit. But.
Yeah. That's the thing they do on all the science characters have... sort of science officers have white boots.
Oh, they pulled. I'm sorry. They pulled a line. That's an order. Her mom did that when she told her to go to therapy. She said that's an order. She used that's an order.
Did you like it or not in this context?
I was neutral to it. I thought it was passable but not necessary.
Good.
And I can't remember who said this to who, but it was to Tendi. No, I remember somebody said it to Tendi. I think it was Mariner to Tendi. She's like, let's get tacos.
Yeah, right. Back to the taco thing. I thought
they dig on tacos.
I definitely remember that. But so you got notes on that thing, and you got notes on that thing.
Dan has his phone and laptop open.
Yeah, because sometimes during my first viewing, even though I tell myself not to take notes, sometimes I take a couple.
But why don't you take them in the same Google Doc?
Well,
I use a Google Doc.
No,
so
because
I can use my phone and the laptop.
No, because I use my. Oh, you're saying Google Doc? That's a good idea. I use Notepad++ on this, and I use some kind of.
I can't type very fast. I always write
fair
it down
note.
On paper.
Fair note.
Jesse has
Android.
I have a notebook.
Sort of a leather-bound.
I got a podcast notebook.
Old notebook. It looks
Jesse's
like
Jesse's is cool. Your idea for the Google
thing.
Docs is I might have used Google Docs. And, I don't know.
I've got the Google Docs for every episode. You got a Google Doc. You got its own Google Doc for each individual
grimoire.
Podcast episode.
But yeah, I was.
Did you say podcast grimoire?
Yes.
That's awesome. Okay. Anyway, we gotta close out the show. Nobody's gonna listen to this. So real quick before
it's got Star Trek Instagram, Facebook.
We'll do the Instagram, Facebook in a second. I just wanted to quickly call out the new official Star Trek podcast. It's called Star Trek: The Pod Directive. And look, I know sometimes these official podcasts aren't so good for TV shows and things like that. They're a little too corporate or whatever. But this one is hosted by Tawny Newsome, who plays Mariner, and by Paul F. Tompkins, who plays Moogly Mooler. He plays the bird psychiatrist.
Dr. Migley Moo.
Migley Bo.
And
Migley Bo.
Dr. Taily Poe.
What's different about this podcast is they are talking each episode to some very, very famous people about Star Trek. The first episode was Ben Stiller. You learn a lot of really interesting stuff.
Oh, I heard about that.
Yeah, Ben Stiller's he's a little sleepy in the episode, but his background with TOS is fascinating because his parents were actors, and so he got to meet William Shatner as a kid, and he has a funny story about that and how.
How come no one ever thinks of past tense of shit when they say Shatner?
Everyone thinks about that.
I never think about that. I think it's something I should think about it more often, but I don't.
Well, make a fucking note on your phone or your laptop.
It's just, yeah. No, well, I mean, I don't want to start.
You want to start chatting?
No, thinking about chat.
What about getting kirked? You think about getting kirked?
I think about it more when people say kirking out.
Yeah, this guy's kirking out. I'm not even fully remembering what that means.
I think it means you're wigging out.
You're really kind of going crazy, right?
Yeah, I think it's like when they do that caricature of Kirk being crazy.
So Tawny Newsom and Paul F. Tompkins, they're really great podcast hosts, but they both host other podcasts, right? So Tawny Newsom hosts Yo, Is This Racist? And Paul F. Tompkins is a frequent guest, of course, on Comedy Bang Bang and a million other podcasts like Freedom and Super Ego and all these other, like, I mean, Paul F. Tompkins knows how to podcast. So Ben Stiller was their first guest. Their second guest was Reza Aslan. And they have this fascinating discussion. You know, he's an academic scholar primarily on religion and things like that. So he has this really interesting discussion about symbology and metaphor and religion as it relates to Star Trek and sort of the history of Star Trek production and sort of the philosophy that Gene Roddenberry was living under versus philosophy now. And that episode, they focus primarily on the episode Darmok, which was, you know, the second episode of fifth season of TNG. Really, really, really fascinating episode. And the most recent episode was with Paul F. Tompkins wasn't in it. And for reasons you'll understand in a second, Tawny Newsom got together with Michelle Hurd, who played Rafi in Picard, and Angelica Jade Bastien.
Not the singer.
Angelica Jade Bastien is a writer for Vulture. She's a critic. And Kendra James is the managing editor for StarTrek.com. And they are three black women, and they spoke about the experience of black women with sci-fi and in sci-fi fandom. And the first thing you really learn in this episode, Tawny Newsom knows her fucking shit about Star Trek. And she talks about some very interesting behind the scenes things about how she got the job. And Michelle Hurd talks about some similar things and a really fun and interesting podcast episode. So go subscribe if you want to hear some like actual insightful kind of clever stuff from famous people. Go listen to that podcast, then come back here and listen to even more famous people, because we're thronged by fucking fans every time we go
famous
to the grocery
Dan
store
and famous Patrick.
Then you can come here and we'll make jokes about having sex with eels and stuff like that, the stuff that you have come
slippery as an eel,
you have come to enjoy and expect from us. So anyway, check out that podcast.
I was watching when watching Mariner. It's kind of off topic, but I'm just presenting it as an idea. It was made me think, watching her be all like uncharacteristically uncool, made me think about how villains get their start. And are they all just assholes to begin with? Or are they just folk that freaked out to a certain point? And then like, you know, I guess
when they teach creative writing, they tell you that the successful stories have to be written in such a way that the villain believes they're the good guy.
Is Khan a good guy?
He believes he's the good guy.
Yeah.
And he does. A good villain
believes
they are the good
guy. But after a certain point, they have to realize that their methods are a little nutty.
They do not.
Because like maybe they are good guys, but like they just their goals are good. It's just their methods are so nutty.
That's one variation, but that is not a requirement. What the requirement is from their perspective. It does not matter if they are mass murdering people. Like, for example, in Our Man Bashir, when they get stuck on the hologram and Sisko is stuck in the character of the evil James Bond villain and he wants to use lasers to melt the ice caps and have earthquakes and raise the water level and have all the geniuses live on Mount Everest where it'll be an island paradise, he's committing mass murder of billions of people. But from his perspective, he's saving humanity by selecting all the smartest people and restarting the world. Now, that's ridiculous and crazy from most moral perspectives. But from his perspective, it works. So that's the trick.
But you can still make an argument that, you know, if you put all the smart people on the top of the mountain.
You got Jesse on board.
Okay.
All right. So that's going to do it for us tonight. We can be found on various social medias like Twitter and Instagram. What's the address on either Twitter or Instagram, Dan?
Do you remember this week, Jesse?
Yes, do you, motherfucker?
It's just one word you miss every time.
It's the transitive property. He's allowed to ask
it's
you,
It's like
Jesse.
The at part.
There, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yes, you're right.
At.
It's got Star Trek. At it's got Star Trek.
At it's got a Star Trek.
It's got a Star Trek. Hey, at the it's got a Star Trek. You got a crazy pizza on your face.
You want a pepperoni pizza? You got a Star Trek.
You got a pepperoni sausage pizza. Yeah. With a mozzarella. So, a buffalo mozzarella.
An email would be feedback@itsgotstartrek.com.
Well enunciated.
Thanks.
Well done.
Thanks.
And the website is itsgotstartrek.com, and there's Facebook, and there's your YouTube.
There's the YouTube.
You got all sorts of stuff. You got all sorts
of
options.
Some of these media options.
Yeah, some of these, some of those. You go here, you go there, you're going to find us. You've already listened to us.
Get
but
it
you
the
probably
YouTube.
Already know. If
you've
you
listened this far.
You listen to the Twitter.
Some people might suggest we say this at the beginning of the episode, but I don't want to put people off at the beginning.
And the Facebook.
We're already doing too much to put people off.
The emoil and the YouTube.
The emoil.
One of those guys.
Emoil.
One of those guys.
An emoil, that sounds like some future shit that we don't want to be a part of.
Emoil. All right. So
E-moil.
Thank you very much for
electronic
listening
oil.
This week. Next week, we're very excited to see and discuss the season finale of Star Trek Lower Decks, which I don't know what it's called yet because they haven't released the name, but they will soon, and we will watch it, and then we will report back to you about our thoughts, and we might talk about eel sex.
I realize that it's not me that had BO a few weeks back. It's definitely my energy drink that smells like BO.
I'm glad that we finally resolved that. I don't recall
Monster
that.
Monster Energy Ultra Fiesta. It tastes like grapefruit, smells like BO.
Okay.
Yeah, because I was like, wasn't sure, but I'm super clean. And
yeah,
wasn't.
you don't usually smell like BO.
No, it's like old BO, like old stale sweat BO, you know, not the fresh produce BO. Like, anyway.
Well done. I'm glad you explained that because I was a little put off by you sort of sticking your nose deep into your can.
It's got it.
Oh, don't you hate how people sniff in movies and TV shows? It always sounds like they got a nose full of boogers. It's like I can't even do it.
It's because they have the world's best Foley artists.
Yeah.
They develop artificial noses to make sniff noses.
Yeah,
sniff
yeah.
noises.
I don't have that.
It's got BO Foley.
It's got all sorts of stuff. All right.
All right.
So that'll be it
so
for us.
So that'll be it for us.
This week. And
we got to stop it now.
We'll talk to you next week. All right. Bye-bye.
But one last thing.
Warning, hydrant levels critical.
Damn it, we don't have much time. Rerouting the vents would take a whole team.
If we bypass the indica controls and suppress the sativa vents, it should function as a
rudimentary plasma filter. Wow, for a random space marauder, you really know your way around a starship.
Ah, thanks.